Guys, welcome back. We got part two of my interview with Steve Orlando right now.
I don't know.
But... Was that the pitch where you like, I write Wonder Woman and I want to fuck?
The boring adult answer is no. It's actually quite the opposite, because in the age of like things being used against you and things like any type of notability actually renders it very hard to be on any type of romantic or social application. I actually like, there was like at least 7 questions someone would have to ask to get to me saying what I actually do.
Right.
And by the way, this is not me like stroking my own fucking dick here. Like, I'm not famous, but that job sounds famous, right? Even though it's not talking about.
No, so, not at all. You have to protect yourself if you're involved in any kind of media, you know, and like we talked about this before the show started. You know,
just ask Xavier and that other dude and Soraya.
Exactly. Like, you never know, like, what.
Take an innocent sex tape and suddenly the whole world knows.
Yeah, you know, like everybody, and but it's like, it's also like that weird, like, it's that age we live in, you know, where it's like the social media age, where it's like everything gets exposed and everything gets like put under a spotlight. And it's like, listen, you don't want to get made fun of. I think that's, at the end of the day, that's probably part of it, you know, and you also don't want to lose your fucking job, you know.
Well, you're giving the note behind the note, which is like, if someone leaks your news, you better make sure you have a giant fucking cock.
Right. Or at least be like, or really proud of it, you know.
or a great angle, you know, like there's many options. But
you don't want a sad boy down there. You want, like, if it's coming out, you want it like fucking proud.
You don't want the James Ellsworth, but like
oh boy.
Just your dick has no chin, and it's just, anyway. So weren't you asking me how we got into wrestling, and now we're on sex apps. Anyway,
we were talking about you coming out to your own theme music. Steve Orlando comes out to Black Diamond.
Oh, so Black Diamond would almost definitely be it. I mean, yeah, I mean, yes, that's probably the answer. Because it's the one that best fits into what I think is an effective wrestling. I do secretly like this song called Evolution by the band Dream Evil. Dream Evil is awesome. Like, they're definitely tongue-in-cheek, but it's like tongue-in-cheek, like power metal. And Evolution specifically has like a breakdown where he just screams, if you don't like it, you don't have to breathe. Hell, Satan, hell, me. And I would like to come out to Hell, Satan, hell, me. Or Christian Woman by Typo Negative.
Oh, fuck.
The only issue is that song's like 13 minutes long, which would still not be as long as Cody or Roman's entrance.
Exactly. Well, where would you... Okay, so you blew my mind right there. My two favorite Dream Evil songs. One, The Book of Heavy Metal. I don't know if you were familiar with that.
And I signed a contract with the devil. I literally know the first words.
Oh, so good. So good. It wouldn't be my theme music, but like, I fucking love that song. And The Chosen Ones, I think,
not heard that one, I will tell you.
I think it's from like whatever album came out in 99, and it's just like, it's about a bunch of dudes killing a dragon, but it's so over the top, like poetic. Yeah.
I do think it's Evolution for me, or I do like Fire, Battle, and Metal as well. I also like a small runner up for the band The Answer, who has a song called Evil Man, which is also pretty good. And would like, but The Answer is more like, they're not like Dream Evil. They're more like tongue in cheek,
like a Steel Panther type.
Yeah, they open for AC/DC when I saw them at AC. Like, that's the kind of thing they do. But you know, they still have like dirty harmonica breakdowns and shit that I get really into.
I'm cool with that.
I don't know why they're all featuring around evil, but I do also like Mr. Evil by the band Jackal. Funny story, I was in an 80s cover band in college. I was the lead singer. It was called Fist, which everybody thought I came up with, but I actually stole it from Sebastian Bach when VH1 had that show where they're trying to make a super group.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
he suggested calling it Fist, and everybody was like, fuck no. And I was like, well, we're going to call this band Fist. And anyway, we did all the things you would expect people who were born in 1985 and are seniors at a liberal arts school would want to hear, which is to say we covered Journey. Sure. But we also did a lot of Jackal covers. And the thing is, nobody fucking knew that they were a band. So everybody thought that we had originals. I was really happy with that. We had the Dean of Students came to our concert, and then we played a cover of one of their most famous songs, She Loves My Cock.
What was your outfit during these performances?
We went to Whitesboro, New York, and bought a bunch of wigs. So I had like a full-on like Slash level amount of hair, which is funny because I had long hair in college. It was fucking abysmal.
Yeah, same hair, dude.
It was not long enough. I actually did the Gene Simmons shitty upper ponytail into greater, but also shitty ponytail. But otherwise, I mean, the look was very much just like your GNR meets Motley Crue. Like, I mean, it was like concert tees, ripped pants, bandanas, and that shit. But we all had like, I don't actually remember. Oh yeah, no, we all had like nicknames and things, but my nickname, because I'm an idiot and this is my type of humor, my nickname was just Kenny Loggins, which is just obviously someone else.
Just another person's name.
Yeah, no, I was Steve Kenny Loggins Orlando. This is very much my brand, especially in high school, college rather. My best friend, who was sort of like a wizard, also ran the school, the daily humor magazine at the school. And the thing is that you had to produce enough content to fill a double-sided 11x17 piece of paper every day.
Wow.
5 days, well, at least 6 days a week. I think they were off on Sunday, which can be a lot. So at the end, whenever he didn't have anything, which, you know, it happens, he would run movie reviews by a movie reviewer. And the publication's movie reviewer was a dolphin. And his name was Dolphin Bottlenose Dolphin, the Dolphin, which I thought was the funniest shit. And the review was just the word scree on repeat for both pages.
That's pretty good.
Again, but the point about this, you might think that I'm rambling when I bring it back around. I thought the joke was so funny that I aped it as an ode to my friend in Justice League Annual, where you find out that even though Lobo really loves dolphins, the best he can come up with the name his favorite dolphin is Dolphin.
That's what a way to bring it back around. Amazing. Amazing, Steve.
Really said you knew about Dreamweaver, though. You may have never had someone on your show know who Dreamweaver is, but I've never had anyone in life know who Dreamweaver is.
Listen, I'm a peculiar character. Like there's a like I fucking love heavy metal like so much, and like the typo thing really popped me too. Because I would like every wrestling fan or every like fanboy or whatever, you imagine yourself coming out to like certain music at certain times in your life. And one of the songs that I fucking love to death is Typo Negative's We Hate Everyone.
Sure. You know?
And like,
I just, again, the only reason I didn't pick that at first is because it takes too long to get to like Jesus Christ Looks Like Me, which is my favorite part of that
right,
song.
Right, yeah. And you can't come out with just that part, which it would be funny, but you know, you can't start it with that.
I had a period of time where I was like, looping to the point of exasperation their cover of Cinnamon Girl, actually, which I thought was super, super good too. Funny story about how did I find out Typo about them. I was already kind of aware, but I went to one of my friends from home's bachelor party. Was out in like Nedro, New York, which for like deep upstate New Yorkers, they know that is a true hole.
Wow.
Is that
by like Utica?
No, it's outside of Syracuse, but it's just there's not a lot going on in Nedro. So, you know, it's a bachelor party. We're doing bachelor party things. There are dancers and things like that. And, my friend who is the groom to be was getting a lap dance. And the dancer said that she would, you know, she would dance for the duration of whatever song he picked for as long as the song ran. And he picked the 13-minute version of Christian Woman.
Oh, what a G. Straight up. Good call.
Like giving her some water in the side. I was like, all right, we're halfway done.
There's a... That's funny that you mentioned that. Do you like Dream Theater at all?
Yeah, I mean, there's no point in lying to you. I know the name, but I've not listened to them. So, I mean, so I don't have an opinion either way.
Okay, so there is a Dream Theater. I love Dream Theater. There's a Dream Theater song that I fucking love. It's 18 minutes long, and it's called the Count of Tuscany. And I feel like if I remember that next time I go to some kind of strip club, and they're like, you can play any song you want, it will be the 18 minute long Count of Tuscany.
You should. Yeah, I mean, that's like, I mean, I want more bands to do super long songs, and also more bands that only do concept albums. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm a huge, huge King Diamond fan, but I do respect his metal falsetto and the fact that he only does concept albums.
Listen, Abigail's, I think, 30th anniversary was last week, maybe, or the week after, the week before. I forgot. Whatever. That guy fucking rocks.
I am passive, but I will say, is it them that has invisible guests on it? Like I think that's my favorite album. I feel like that's the one I've been playing.
I think it is them.
It has the tea time song where it's just like super hard, but he's just talking about sitting down for tea.
Yes.
Of course, it is time for tea.
I think that always F's me up too. Yes, them has invisible guests. Abigail has Abigail on it. Them has Invisible and Welcome Home, like Grandma, you know, like, but very
Welcome
classic.
Home is very good, though. Welcome Home is like, yeah. Well, that's the song, right? Isn't that what Jay and Silent Bob danced to? Which is definitely where I discovered that, like King Diamond, like,
yeah,
no,
yeah,
that it was anywhere else. I could just see fucking Jay Mews.
I'm gonna torture my wife later because you knew about Dream Evil. Again, I would say the same thing that you said to me. First guest to talk about Dream Evil, first possible person to talk about Dream Evil too, like in real life, that I didn't force it upon.
it sucks. I'm trying to think. I recently discovered a couple other things in this genre that I was into, but it's completely slipping my mind right now. I did find, I think Eric Carr, to bring it back there, I think he had a solo album called Rockology that I've been on vinyl for. But I did get one, I feel like I heard one single off it, and it was fucking banging. I mean, in full transparency, I have my metal moods, but it's been mostly indie for me recently. I discovered a band called Wet Leg, which I think is one of the best names I've ever heard for a band.
Okay.
Wet Leg are these two English ladies, and they're just like, they always, like, the videos are incredible. The dialogue, or not the dialogue, Jesus, the lyrics are great. The first song I listened to was about her getting a diploma, but she's just referring to it as the big D throughout the entire song. So she's just over and over again saying, I went to college and got the big D.
Check that out.
And then I followed them. And they're a great band, so I'm not like tattling on him, but like I followed them on Instagram, and the only two followers in common, or like the only people I follow that also followed them, were the editor of X-Men, Jordan White, and Wayne Coyne. And I was like, this is good company to be in.
All right, yeah, why not? You know,
I mean, I also fucking love the Flaming Lips. They are not metal at all, but I do think that, I mean, they're an incredible band, especially to see live. Like, even if you're not super into it. Even if you're not like super into their shit, because that's subjective. Like, actually, this is the way I pitch wrestling. I'm now going to pitch you the Flaming Lips the way that I pitch people who don't like wrestling.
Yeah.
Like, this is all true. Like, I never ask anyone who I'm not owning a house with to watch wrestling with me on TV, because I think that is a little more of a challenge. Yeah. But I have, without exaggeration, never had someone not enjoy going to one of the indie shows around Boston. I mean, never. I don't mean going to see AEW or WWE where you're like in the ass bleeds and you can't see anything. Like, if I take someone to like we have Beyond up here. We have Pro Wrestling Super Show. These can be the widest array of people you would imagine. I took my 70-year-old neighbor one time, and like, something about going live, it's just different. I've never had someone not have a good time, no matter what their predisposed ideas were. And similarly, like, the Flaming Lips have a fucking buck wild show. Like, I saw them at the New York State Fair in 2006. They had like 20 extras dressed as Santa Claus who were like running around on stage shooting like balloons and things into the crowd. It's just like a giant celebration show. They also
it seems like a lot of fun.
They do these shows where you can find looks online too. It was pre-COVID, but it worked great for COVID. They had shows where everybody was in a giant like plastic bubble, and Wayne would just like roll out over the bubbles into the crowd because he was also in a bubble. It's a very cool live show. I also just aspire to be a weird guy like him. So
they're a lot of Flaming Lips stuff has shown up lately on social media, like with their Letterman appearances.
I mean, I'll be quite honest with you. I didn't even know that they had appeared on Letterman. But which is embarrassing because I was definitely a Letterman, not a Jay Leno guy.
Yeah.
No shade if you like. I just I recently had a Norm Macdonald kick, and I had no idea that he was so close to Letterman.
The bet. Oh yeah, yeah. Like they were like he wrote on the show, and they were like really buddy buddy. Like same here. Like Norm is also awesome. But he's a hard. I feel like he's a hard sell for people just because like that specific sense of humor. You know, we're going everywhere today. By the way, we're going comics, wrestling, heavy metal, Dream Evil. Fucking Letterman.
I feel like this is a good thing. Like, it depends what version of Norm you get. Because, like, I mean, I have a dark sense of humor, so there's no version that I don't like. But, like, at the same time, like, I do think he was kind of genius, and not necessarily for the things people expect. Yeah. Like, if you're a fan, you probably already know. But like his Bob Saget Comedy Central roast performance.
Oh my god! Yeah,
is one of the best things ever I've ever seen. And it, like, for folks who have not seen it, like. The whole point is a roast, and he goes up and tells like not even dad jokes. He tells like grand jokes. But because it's a roast, then everybody's like, "Oh, Bob Saget's dick once fell off into an alien hooker and flew into the sun," you know. Like, and then you know he comes up there and he's like, "He has the eye of an eagle. This man is for the birds." You know,
it's genius. It's great.
No, it's amazing. Once everybody realizes what's going on, you know, like for the first few, the crowd is like, "What is this shit?" And then they realize that it's on purpose, and everybody's fucking. And the key for me is that even the other comedians can barely contain themselves.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I remember
they know what he's doing.
I remember him burying Gilbert Gottfried specifically. He's like, Gilbert once went into a bathroom, which confused me because the sign outside said, "Gentlemen, pay no heed, pass on by." End of joke. And I also just rewatched Dirty Work, and it's a challenging movie, but I did fucking love it. I don't know what else to say.
Well, Rickles is also in Dirty Work, so that kind of makes Rickles
is in it. And like, I was just talking to a friend about this. I do feel like I do think there's things that have not aged amazingly in a lot of 90s comedy, but I do enjoy like, you know, like pops in Dirty Work. The low hanging fruit kind of goes whatever way for me, but like, it's the blunt but subtle things. Like Pops is reading a porn mag in that movie. Mm. And if you look, the porn mag he's reading is called Impotent Old Men and Whores.
Total Norm joke.
Yes.
Yeah. Just,
yeah. Because it's so obvious that you can't help but laugh on it. Like anyway. And I do like, I mean, this was in a string with Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore.
Yeah.
Of which I will say that the only one that I think really is pretty timeless is Happy Gilmore. There's actually nothing that has aged poorly in it. Weirdly, like it's devoid of the gay jokes that most 90s movies have.
Yeah, yeah.
The only thing that shocked me is that he doesn't fucking kill Ben Stiller. I hadn't seen it in so long. Ben Stiller plays this guy that's abusing his grandmother, and Happy is a guy that has anger issues. And I was like, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Like Stiller was going to slip up and Sandler was just going to fucking murder him, but like nothing happens.
I think it was probably like the age of that cameo where it's like, yo, Stiller's going to do it, like whatever, and they just didn't even think about like any kind of character arc. You know, I think most people also just remember that from like it's like that Misa lady's out there. You know, like that specific scene. Are you a fan of Patrice O'Neill at all?
I've liked stuff, but I'm not super. Mm-hmm. I'm not super knowledgeable. I will admit, like I probably saw him on things like roasts and like Comedy Central stand-up, but I've never like. I'm not as deep as I should be.
Jump in. If you're into the Norm stuff, I would strongly suggest like do the Patrice stuff because like it's almost on the same wavelength of it's just like very realistic, dry sarcasm. You know,
I mean, probably. I mean, I was gonna say I am a Jeselnik guy, so like, I feel like if I can handle that, which is a lot for some people.
Yeah, he disappeared for a little bit, huh?
I don't know. I mean, I loved his last special about, yeah. But of course, it was about not enough people drop babies. So
yeah. Well, he like apparently like from what I hear, like apparently he's like the world's biggest sweetheart.
Well, that's kind of the interesting thing. Like, people who think the character is your person. Like, I don't know him personally, but if you look, like, I mean, his comedy is one thing, but then if you actually, and that's the talk, but if you look at the walk, like, he almost always would have female openers. He would almost always hire, like the things that really matter when it comes to optics were there. But if you're a person that just only see his joke that is about, like, again, like setting babies on fire, and then maybe you have the other ideas, right?
Tough stuff.
I love his joke. He tells in the most recent one, there's an Alzheimer's joke, right? And he's like, oh, Alzheimer's. Devastating. I bought my new house. And I like his deliberate delivery as well. You know, I bought my new house and I thought I was going to have to move finally, because every day my neighbor, my 70-year-old neighbor with Alzheimer's, would come over looking for his wife. And every day I would have to tell my 70-year-old neighbor with Alzheimer's that his wife was dead. And I almost thought I was going to have to move, but I decided it was worth it every day just to see the smile on his face.
That's a good joke. It's a good joke. That's a nice little bit there.
And I'm like, but that's his key, is that like, when you think you know where it's going, this thing is like, the joke is long and you think you're ahead of it, but he's always, I don't know, mad respect for that, because that takes a lot of forethought, something that I do not have.
Yeah, it works for him. Are you going to be at New York Comic Con this year or no?
Yeah. Don't ask me where and when, but I will be there because it's a little far.
You said
away,
the same thing to me last year. You were like, I'll be floating around.
Well, I'll probably see you at the place. I'll probably see you at the place I saw you last year.
Well, that was a weird situation. Because we went specifically for the gallery.
And folks, by the way, like, we're not talking about like a fucking like donkey show club. We're talking just about the bar.
It was a bar in Midtown. I'm not going to give it away. It was a bar in Midtown. If it's the same place, that's cool. But that was an interesting night, because like, my buddy's a comedian and I only see him like maybe like 3 times a year. And he was like, hey, I'm doing a show on like 53rd and 8th. I know you're going to be in the city for con. Like, do you want to meet up? And I was like, I'm actually going to be at this bar and it's on whatever. So my wife and I hung out with him for a little bit. And then we were like, oh, let's go upstairs and see the gallery, Jerry Duggan's photo gallery. And, you know, I got like a nice little invite from his manager, or whatever it was, or like his press guy. Mm-hmm. And then we do the tour of the gallery and we were like, all right, that's cool, say hi to Jerry Duggan, cool, what's up, I'm so and so, I'm trying to get you on my show, blah blah blah. And then all of a sudden we're in the corner, my wife and I are in the corner, and I was like, oh shit, like, I interviewed that guy, oh shit, there's Steve Orlando, and then made a beeline for you. And it was it's weird, because like, I don't get nervous, but I get nervous because I love comics so much, you know. So I'm like,
I think I told you last time that you are one of the few podcasts that I was nervous, because to me you're the fucking Mattman guy.
So, well,
like, you, that's true.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Like, you know, so I was like, oh fuck, I'm nervous. I don't get nervous. I'm like, fuck, I'm nervous. Like, these guys write a lot. These are like holding up the pillars of creativity that I loved since I was a child. And my wife was just like, fucking suck it up. Just fucking talk to people. You're good at talking to people. I was like, all right, cool. And then it ended up being like a pretty fucking cool time.
Well, that is the reality though. Like, I mean, when we meet people, it's like a ladder, man. Like, I've been, when I was at DC, I would be at premieres for TV or movie shit, and like, I had actors that would have that reaction. I had the same reaction as your wife to them. I was like, my friend, like, we all work for Warner Brothers. We are here because we work for the same company. So just don't be a fucking maniac and go over and talk to them.
That's the thing. Know? Yeah. Like, you can't be like the tongue hanging out, like, weirdo, because then people will pick up on that. I'm not like that usually, but I'm saying, like, there's, you know, you have to kind of like, hi, I'm so and so. But inside, you're kind of like,
I am, in a creative sense, I could not be more impressed and in a way in awe of the trick that Seth Rollins has played, in that he has created a character for which literally nothing could be out of character.
And he
does not have to change a damn thing if he's working a face or a heel. He's just Seth Rollins, and he can just and he can't, and nothing, he could never look at a character. He can wear whatever the fuck he wants. My boyfriend will come and see Seth's entrance just to see what bullshit he is wearing and then walk away, you know, like, and it's impressive because it's a hard thing to do, but like the current version, he could ride that train for the rest of his career and never change, because like, if he's working a face, he's a heel. If he's working a heel, he's a face, like, cause he's just a weirdo. And it's impressive. I must admit, like, I didn't like him for a long time, but I love Weird Seth now.
I'm a big fan of Weird Seth. I do think I agree with you 100%, but I do think also like he just can't escape the look of like a Muppet. Like, he looks like he should be in Dr. Teeth's band, you know, like he has that big, like, weird floppy presence about him where like he can do anything, you know, as opposed to like a Roman Reigns or a Brock Lesnar, where they're like, that's it, you know, like, I feel like maybe
I was surprised that Farmer Brock worked. I generally agree, but I was surprised that Farmer Brock worked.
Farmer Brock worked in a weird way. Like, I don't know, like to me, like again, like, not to throw shade or anything, but I'm like, is his new character a racist? For some reason, like, I just read it like that immediately.
I mean, that being said, like, Farmer Brock got us maybe the sexiest moment I've ever seen in wrestling, which is when he threw that mic at SummerSlam and Roman caught it without moving and winked at him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Holy shit.
I've never been so wet. I mean, in front of I can't believe that worked out. I can't imagine how many times they tried, and like, that's like all or nothing, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And listen, Roman's like, he's kind of the fucking best. You know, and it's weird to say that, like, you don't want to, like again, the tribalism thing, or like, oh, why do you like him? He's corny kind of thing. But like, Roman is, like, there's a reason that dude's on top, you know, and like, there's a reason why they saw something in him 10 years ago where they were like, put this guy in the Shield. You know, it could have been Chris Hero.
Now that they let him be himself, I would totally agree. I think that a lot of the shit that people hold against him, I have to only assume based on, you know, the way the sausage happens where I eat it, sell it, whatever you want. It's not like that's the shit he wanted to do, right? Like, to me, he seems so much more comfortable being what he is now, talking like himself, you know, like just showing up in Jordans and a t-shirt, not a weird flack vest that no human would wear.
Right. Just being charming. I think that's the thing. I think it's like when you get to that certain level of, when creative gives you a little bit and you're like, hey, I'm a charming guy, let me just be charming. And you can see it with like a Shawn Michaels, or like even like a Steve Austin. Like, and these are big names that you're throwing out there, but like, we trust you enough to let your charm shine. I think that's what the Roman thing is, you know, and he's a very, very charming guy, you know, like, his interviews are always great. Like, outside of WWE, you know, he's very tongue in cheek, but not like over the top, not like The Rock would be, you know what I mean? Like, where it's like, it's very
funny, because I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say The Rock was not one of the greatest, but I would, that to me is an example of someone whose angle or gimmick rather has not really aged well. Like, now when he comes back, he's doing like the strudel and all that shit. It's actually kind of awkward for me. I can't lie.
Right. It was from the time, you know, because it was like reality television, Jerry Springer, Richard Bay. I feel like that Richard Bay reference, like, not a lot of people are going to get, but who cares? Very much like, you know, like, I'm going to talk about my cock.
to be clear, I do still sometimes watch the promo that literally ended Billy Gunn's WWE career just for kicks, which is to say, are you there, God? It's me, Billy. It's a problem. I won King of the Ring, but there's just one problem. I still absolutely suck. But at the same time, like, who's laughing now? I don't think there's someone who is 60 years old that's having a better career than Billy.
Oh my God.
I mean, to be fair, I think that he's had a fair amount of chicken breast and broccoli these days.
Oh yeah.
But it's wild to me. It's wild to me to specifically think about the dude. I mean, in the last month specifically, we have the dude who was in maybe one of the most inadvertently or purposefully homophobic angles ever when he was fucking Billy and Chuck. And now he's scissoring with a dude who got an entire crowd to pop for him saying he was gay, a thing that I never thought would happen.
Yeah, you know? And that's, I think it's like, because he gets it, right? Like, Billy Gunn gets it. You know, like he seems like a, like the type of guy that's just like, dad, whatever, man. Like, everything's fucking cool all the time. Whatever you want. Even in interviews, like, he just, like, now I guess that he's like sober, you know, it just seems like he's got like a different perspective, which is really cool. And yeah, going from Chuck and Billy, the ass man, a lot of that stuff, to the scissoring with Anthony Bones.
Ass man is one of the greatest fucking entrance songs.
Oh,
ever.
Absolutely.
Like, that's my fucking entrance, actually, but it's more subversive when I come out to it for obvious reasons.
I would fucking love it to, I would love to see you on a panel and all of a sudden you hear like bomb bomb and then just,
I'm an ass man.
Oh my god, dude, like, please, can you do, if you're gonna do a panel at New York Comic Con, can you please come out to Ass Man? And I feel like nobody would fucking get it. So a few people would get it, you know, but
yeah, it'd be you and Kingston in the back just dying. And the lyrics are such hot garbage, by the way. The riff is amazing. Like, let's just go that and Cactus Jack, my two favorite licks, I think.
Jim Johnson, man.
But like, yeah, I mean, I would say though that fucking Bowens moment, I don't think that, I mean, it was historic, but I don't think that AEW and wrestling fans, at least younger ones, really understand how fucking wild that is. Because like, there was a question. I mean, again, for just like the reverse, there was no guarantee that Bowens's character, Bowens, was gay.
Right.
And I would understand why they left that open, because it hasn't traditionally been, at least in the mainstream, the most accepting community. It's fucking wild. Like, when the minute that angle started with Harley, I was just like, this can't be where it's going to go, because it can't, because it never has been. And then they did it, man. And like, obviously, to hear everyone applaud and literally do the he's gay chant, I'm like, great. Yeah, I never thought that would happen. You know, like, you know, it's, I mean, not to be morbid, but you watch like Dark Side of the Ring with fucking Canyon and you wish that you had like a fucking time machine so that people could know it's possible.
Yeah. But I also think it's like, there's a death of machismo, which I think needs to happen. You know what I mean? Where like, yeah, you don't know, like the Canyon thing specifically always makes me think of that. You know what I mean? Where it's like,
well, there's been steps, right? Like, I mean, technically Kenny and Kota were not a couple, but they kind of were in the goal. I mean, like the way that the Golden Lovers, I mean, they were called the Golden Lovers, and their fucking workout videos were the gayest shit ever.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that Kenny I think that people have asked him about his sexuality before, and he's at least demurred about it a little bit. So I feel like there were like steps on the road. Now I can't imagine having Kenny having gay sex, to be quite clear, because like his little bug eyes, I just can't imagine what would happen. You know, he's like top in Coda, and he just says you can't escape. I got to admit, like, I fucking love Kenny, but I've always something about when he came to America, I've loved a lot of his stuff, but it is a little different. I even can't put my finger on it.
Same here, man. We talk about that on Mad Men all the time, where it's like New Japan Kenny comes out very rarely. So like that Forbidden Door match with Will Ospreay, that was New Japan Kenny.
I mean, my dream booking is that, like, I mean, because Kota is his boyfriend. Like, I just like, he's already come back as a cleaner now, but when they were doing Golden Lovers, like, my fan that someone would fucking, there would be a run-in backstage, someone fucking murders Kota, and, you know, he's got to go back to being the cleaner, you know, because you hurt his boy, and then he becomes Kenny again. But I mean, we have gotten the cleaner music from time to time. I will admit, I do think it's better than his video game music. Well, they're both video game music, but you know, it's like beep boop 16-bit music.
Yeah. I don't mind. I'm completely enamored with the guy. Like, as far as like wrestling goes, like, it's one of those things where I'm like, ah, you know, this is what's great about pro wrestling. And it's almost like I'll be that cringy fan who's like, fucking Kenny Omega. Like last week on Dynamite with the whole neck thing and then him saying like, hey, we still got a fifth man and it's Kota Ibushi. Like I practically did a backflip out my fucking window.
I mean, who else was it going to be? But yes, like, yeah. I mean, it's Evil and everybody, and Evil's great, by the way, but like everybody.
Everybody's great, but yeah, you're right. Like, it's like, I mean, it's
the best shade would be if it was not Kota Ibushi, but just Ibushi, the ass guy. Bushi's the mask guy. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm thinking of who's the comedy guy that
Toriano?
My dream at Forbidden Door, and I tell him this, like, I want Danhausen and Toriyano in, like, the ultimate comedy match, and it would be amazing. I'm sorry.
Like, throw Cole Cabana in there, and I'd be fucking 100% in on that.
Speaking of murder gimmicks, I loved the one time we got murder Danhausen, and he never came back.
Yeah.
Like,
he's still banged up, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
He's crushing it in the merch game, as usual, but...
Oh, forget it.
But like, yeah, I mean, I can just imagine it's anyone but Kota. The fans are just dying. I mean, there's Toriyano is probably the funniest possible thing it could be. There's maybe something else. I mean, other than it's not even someone from Japan. Like, you know, because Kenny said he went to Japan and they just don't follow up on it. It's just like the Brooklyn Brawler, you know, that
right. Funny. Yeah. Oh, my God. It's like Sergeant Slaughter. And it shows up. There's somebody really weird.
His music wasn't bad either. If they did he had one music that was cool, I thought. But no, honestly, if you want to talk about surprises for me, though, since we're just running around, I talk about this with my friends all the time. Like, and I've even tweeted about it. Like, this is a positive. Like, there's no shade intended here. When they hired Jeff Jarrett, I was like, why?
Yeah.
But I will admit, I think that dude has been like low key one of their greatest assets. When we were younger, everybody wrestled like that. Now nobody wrestles like that.
Right.
And his matches are super fun. Like sometimes compelling in a way, like his match with Orange Cassidy, I was texting with my friend and I was like, I don't even know why I'm so into this, but I'm incredibly into it.
Some of the best punches in the business too. Like very interesting. Like now, like him doing the same thing now is so great, and he's another like immortal, even though he kind of looks like Mark Twain a little bit. Like him and Billy Gunn are just like these guys that won't stop.
Well, I think that I think a lot of that, you know, with a joking aside, even guys like Sting, although I want him just to just retire and not die.
Yeah.
I think the dudes that went to TNA instead of WWE benefited from the softer schedule, to be honest. You know, like you can look, Jeff Jarrett is 55. 55 can look like a lot of different things. It doesn't often look like Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're 100% right. Yeah. You could look like RG Bunker.
You know, it's wild because, yeah, he's doing the stuff, but he's just like, in a way, like without sounding like, oh, the old days, like, I do think there's a narrative to his work that I think is relatively unique and a lot of people could learn from. I do think there are a lot of guys that just like want to go in there and get their shit in and do their spots. And I'm not a guy that's, oh, it's a spot fest, whatever. If it's fun, it's fun. But I do think that his matches are so engaging because he gets narrative. There is a story to his things and he's not just trying to make sure he does the coolest shit. And in a way, I honestly think that helps get the people he works with over more than if you're just a dude who has like a crazy, like 6:30 senton or something.
I agree with that 100%. I think also like they, I don't know if it was a missed opportunity, but I do think he should have held on to that, international title. I feel like he should have beat Orange Cassidy for like a week or 2 weeks.
He's the only guy that I would have been okay with it. I mean, I'll be okay with whatever if it works out, but like I would agree with you. I mean, I like that OC has had it because I will say too, in a completely different way than Jeff Jarrett, when OC was signed, I think a lot of people thought that he was just like a joke for again for obvious reasons because he's like a character-driven wrestler. But the international title run has kind of shown that like, nah man, like that dude can work any kind of match with like any. I mean, he can work with Jeff Jarrett and he can work with fucking Buddy Matthews. And I can't think of two people who are like more different when it comes to the shit they do.
Oh, yeah. 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 Absolutely. He's an interesting guy, too, because like a lot of folks that I talk to on the regular are like really, really invested in the Orange Cassidy thing, you know? And I'm like, God, it's really fucking cool that this guy was like, you know, good.
Well, I was going to say, he's the appointment viewing. When Dynamite's on, my boyfriend will usually just be fucking around on his Switch. But the one thing he watches every week or at every pay-per-view, and he's like not into it. I mean, like he gets it for what it is, but like it's the OC stuff. He will always come in and watch OC. And it's funny because when he signed, all my friends were like, well, that's just never going to work on TV. And it's been like the opposite, the thing that everyday people like.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's got like an interesting connection with the fans, and like his interviews are always great. Like, all, like the kayfabe stuff is fascinating. What are you guys playing on Switch, by the way, if I may ask?
Well, not we, him, but Tears of the Kingdom right now.
Same here.
I just remember specifically, like, yes, his interviews are always great, but I just love his, you know, when he got the title and started carrying around in that fucking like knapsack, the same one that you and I probably took to middle school.
A fucking Jansport bag. Yeah.
And like, and I don't even remember who wanted a challenge for him, but like, you may even remember the promo and remember who it was, but whoever the other guy was walks in, interrupts his interview with Renee. And he's just like, hey, what's in there? And he like slowly opens up. He's just like this, his whole answer.
It's fantastic. He's Paul Rudd like, from Wet Hot American Summer.
Oh God. I met him when he did Beyond. Well, it's Beyond Progress crossover show. Mm. And what I liked is that he was, I mean, you know, like a lot of guys, he was still in character even when he was just doing merch sales. So like I bought one of his shirts. And again, to that end, my neighbor who had never been to wrestling before, the only merch she bought was the Orange Cassidy shirt with the picture of him wearing his shirt on it.
Oh wow, that's awesome.
And I went up to pay him. I was like, do you take Venmo? And he was like, dude, look at me.
That's pretty fucking funny.
I was like, okay, I'll go get cash.
Where's the ATM? Where's the ATM guy? That's fucking funny.
That was a wild. I got to tell one other story about that show.
Sure. Because
it comes around to the Bowens thing. So it was crossover. And by the way, another thing that I didn't get for a long time, same friend told me that within Mustache Mountain, Trent was the best pro wrestler, not the best worker, but the best pro wrestler. And I was like, whatever, like, I get it. I like him. I like him enough, but what are you talking about? And so we're doing this match, or they're doing the show, and the match is Pete Dunne and Trent versus people who I can't remember, unfortunately, but progress talent. And Dunne starts, and this was in Melrose, Massachusetts. Dunn starts and they're doing like very like mat wrestling technical stuff, like ZSJ type stuff.
Okay.
And clearly the crowd is getting a little bored with it. And some chode from the audience yells, just make out already, right? And everybody, I mean, it's fucking Massachusetts, so everybody in the crowd boos that dude for being a piece of shit. But, and this is all real, Dunn and the other dude decide that they're just going to troll this motherfucker, and they just start kissing.
Wow.
Right. And then like, so like, and now the crowd's popping huge because not only did they boo this guy, but he's living in hell right now.
Right.
So then, because the crowd pops, fucking Trent and the other guy come in, they start making out as well.
I gotta look that up. That sounds hysterical.
A four-way kiss with the referee in the middle. And then fucking Trent blows a kiss into his hand and he starts hoganing to the fucking crowd to see who's going to win. And then just puts it in his pants and everybody fucking pops huge. And it was like, one of my favorite things because, and that is when I agreed with my friend about Trent because he's not the best person. He fucking knows exactly what to do to fucking pop people and, you know, and get them engaged.
It's such vaudeville, man. It's wild. It's wild. I'm, you know, it's funny. Like I love talking to people who love pro wrestling because it's like, at the end of the day, you're like, you're entertained, you know?
I mean, yeah. And you know, like, and that, by the way, obviously that's like only on the indies. You're not going to have that on a WWE show. You're not going to see Butch in his little like scrappy do mode, making out with some guy.
You know, I feel like you would be, I feel like AEW would be like, you can get away with that, maybe, you know, like I feel like somebody in the crowd could incite like that.
House rules, sure.
Yeah. You know, depending on the match, like I think if somebody in the crowd just yelled at, like, they'd go with it, you know, like consummate entertainers, man. Like it's fucking, it's
Do you remember when Mox on his first promo back when he was from out of rehab, some guy ran his mouth to him. And I think it was the first time anyone had dropped the F-bomb on like live TV.
Yeah.
because he was cutting some promo and some piece of shit from the crowd yelled, "Go have another drink or something." And like on live TV, which is like, "Hey, buddy, why don't you go fuck yourself?" And I was just like, amazing. Never been more over for me in my life.
Absolutely. You know? I think that dude gets carte blanche. You know, like I think he has like a certain status where he can do whatever the fuck he wants and it's okay because, like, at the end of the day, he seems like a really sweet guy. You know?
I mean, listen. We said Mox, so he's probably bleeding right now.
Oh yeah, the thinnest forehead on the planet, thinnest forehead skin on the planet. You can blow a kiss in his direction and he'll start bleeding.
You want to talk about character stuff? It's funny you're talking about Roman. Like I never like they're the same person. That's why it's crazy. I would not ever be excited to see Dean Ambrose versus Roman again. However, I would be excited to see Moxley versus Roman.
I think it's gonna happen.
How? You think he's not going back with everything he said?
I think it's going to happen, dude. I feel like Roman's a lifer. I feel like Seth is a lifer. And I think from what I always hear, the way WWE gets you is they'll be like, hey, think about your kids. You know,
what are they going to let him be Mox? Because that's the thing.
Listen, like they have a beautiful daughter at home. Give it a few more years. Like I think he signed a 5-year extension.
Oh, but to be clear, I'm not even saying he won't go back, I guess. But, I mean, it has to be Mox. I don't want him to go back and be a fucking lunatic lariat and shit again.
No, I think like, in the landscape of whatever this is, you're going to get that specialty attraction of him coming back. I really do feel like you're going to get that Shield reunion at some point. Maybe it's 5 or 6 years from now. It might be a nostalgia thing. It might be, like, an NWO reunion. But at the same time, you'd fucking pop, you know, like who wouldn't want to see like grizzled late 40s Shield back together and one more match between them.
But that's the thing. Like I want it, but it needs to be like, you know, Dean Ambrose is a weirdo who is dressed like Bane. Like it needs to be like Mox biting the flesh from Roman's neck, you know, because he doesn't have the technical work or whatever. So he's just literally like trying to cut his heart out. That's what I need. And then meanwhile, Seth is just like, you know, who knows what he'll be at that point. Like
he'll just look like like a straight up Muppet. He'll be in a Masked Singer outfit at that point.
You were probably right about him having carte blanche, but I don't know. That's a weird thing because that was real life. But at the same time, I never had more respect for him, and he was never more over with me than he was actually defending his real life shit. Than when he was playing Moxley, you know,
100%. We went to real quick story, and I'll wrap it up. We went to All In a couple of years ago, or All Out, whatever. I always get confused with them in Chicago a couple of years ago, and Mox came out where we were sitting by that staircase, and like I lost it like a child. And I yelled like nonsense at him. Like, I think I was like, my wife got a video and it was very much me being like, I think you're a cool guy. And I was like, why did I say that? Just like walking down the stairs. Hysterical.
I mean, I think the last time I had a real screaming, genuine reaction to wrestling, I know that the loudest reaction I ever had to sports in general was, it was a shoot thing. It was not wrestling. Mm-hmm. It was when Nunes beat Cyborg. Because I just had never seen anything like that. I was already a Nunes fan, but like Cyborg was like, I mean, she was like the Hulk, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And I've never seen, to me, that's like one of those moments. If you like mixed martial arts, like that's like, it's just a moment. Like if you're really into a sport, like clearly, I mean, Cyborg had not been knocked out in 14 mm-hmm. fucking years.
Yeah, dude.
And it was so clear when you see, and it's only like a 47-second fight, but you see Amanda Tagger, and it's clear that she has not dealt with anyone who like is not afraid of her in a long fucking time.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll go to the mat for the Lioness, man. Like she talked about maybe coming into wrestling after she retires, and I think she should do it. I think she'd be
I agree.
Better.
Yeah, I think so too. I think the transition is there, you know, for like a lot of MMA people to come over. Especially, I do think the landscape is more open for the women because they bring so much more to the table.
Well, the funny thing is that all the MMA people that WWE hires, she has clowned all of them.
Yeah. Like,
even Ronda, she fucking, yeah. I mean, she hurt her feelings, you know, like.
Wild.
I mean, and like, I love Shayna Baszler, but she, quite honest, it's not like her record was crazy in MMA, right? So, like, yeah.
I think it was just, it was like there. It was there enough for WWE to take notice, you know? And they missed that opportunity with the horsewomen thing.
Well, you know, now you got me ranting. You keep trying to wrap it up. You know what? You know what also grinds my gears, Peter Griffin style. Like, how do you hire the guy? How do you hire the guy that in real life literally beat Brock Lesnar and then job him out because what? He doesn't look like a guy who could beat Brock Lesnar. Like the whole world knows that he fucking did. Like he literally really did.
Perception, man. It's that perception where it's like, no. This is what a champion looks like. You know, it's not. That's how nuts pro wrestling is.
That's the fallacy, though. Like, you know, but like, you don't have to be a body guy to be tough. It's often that dude that looks like Cain Velasquez who like looks that he looks like he enjoys food, but also will just murder you. Like, I don't know.
Genetics.
I'm a coward. I say that like I've been in a lot of fights. I've lost every fight that I've ever been in. But I just, I was so excited when he came by, and I was actually kind of excited because I did like his triple A work as well when he was doing the mask shit. And then he didn't do any of that shit. He just got fucking housed. Anyway, no, for wrestling, it was probably Big E winning the Money in the Bank. I felt, and this is just the skill that Big E has. I do not know him, you know? There's something about his character and his personality. Like, you feel like he's your best friend.
Yeah.
I don't know why. But, like, Big E winning the belt, I felt like my best friend won the fucking belt, right?
Yeah. I think it's because, like, they're so effing likable. You know, he's such a likable big guy. He almost looks like a Pokemon.
No, but I love their attitude and their casual. I wish that I could have the confidence they do in public. Like, joking aside, like I it's not even a promo, but like the three Goldbergs, like the big meaty men slapping meat thing from their podcast, like I find that so endearing. And also, like, at the same time, like, they are burying Goldberg. Like, they clearly think this is a joke. And people in the comics biz are probably not secure enough to handle shit like that, to be quite honest. Like,
yeah,
because you can tell that both, like, Big E has a reverence for Goldberg, but also thinks that he's kind of a clown.
Right. Yeah. Well, what's the comic book thing you mentioned? Like, you don't think creators could get away with that kind of promo? Are creators do I not know that creators are cutting promos on each other behind the scenes?
No, like I wish we could, but we can't. Like, that's the thing, like, because people would not know like that it was a rib. And I'm not like it's not that I'm talking about someone specifically, so just to like clear the like, I just mean, like, if people were like, who do I, well, the easy mark would be like, oh, what's your dream creative team? Like me and like pencils, inks, letters, Rob Liefeld, right? Like, that's but now that I said that, like, for all I know, I'm going to get a fucking C&D in the mail tomorrow. Like, so,
or a DM from Rob being like, hey, brother,
that's kind of what it's like. And it doesn't even mean that Rob isn't, if I said that joke, it wouldn't even mean that he wasn't like foundational or historic. It would just mean like we all know the style is at least a little goofy, you know?
Right.
But even that is like too much. I don't know. Yes. But I will say Rob Liefeld, probably the Goldberg of comics.
Wow.
Except he did not retire. He didn't retire anyone with a super kick, but still.
You never know. He may have tried.
Are you familiar with one of my favorite joke Twitter accounts? Does Bret Hart like Bill Goldberg?
Ooh, no. Please elaborate.
Rich literally just posts the word no every day.
Wow. That's fucking funny. It's not like 4 out of 10, it's just no.
One moment, because I can drop it into the chat before.
Oh, please,
But like, I do, like, I will say that, like, I could watch that, like, the three Goldbergs, and it's just the whole thing is they're like, you want your 5-star classics, Tokyo Dome, none of that shit, man.
No. Listen,
three Goldbergs.
That's the beauty of pro wrestling, where it's like it's whatever you like that does it for you. And that's it. Like, I skip, like, I get so many DMs every day, and I'm not complaining about it, but it's very much like, did you watch this? Do you know about this? What did you think about this? And I'm like, fucking no, man. Like, I don't got enough time. Like, I hate saying that, because, like, I do a bunch of podcasts and shit, but it's true. I got enough time to watch everything, you know? Like, I got a job. Like, this is not my job. This is fucking fun for me, you know? Like, I get to talk to you for 2 hours, and it's fucking dope.
Well, I will say that you will enjoy it as Bret Hart, like Bill Goldberg. As a bonus, it has a retweet. It's almost as good. I mean, it's, I like it because it's not as dark as Wrestle Cringe, but Wrestle Cringe is pretty good. Just when people are showing their asses. But I scrolled down a little bit and it did have, it just has Garcia, Barry, and Brian Pillman for saying that his wrestling crushes Mandy Rose and not his wife and three kids.
That's pretty good. Yeah, throw that in there. Like, send me, like, email it to me.
Oh, it's in the chat. It's in the chat.
I don't, you know, like, this new version of, this makes me feel like old man yelling at clouds. Like, this fucking new version of Zoom is, like, a surprise. Because everything's, like, kind of, like, there's, like, a bunch of buttons on the side. I don't know if you have that on your screen at all.
No, but, I mean, you're the admin or whatever. Yeah,
I'm the admin. There's a ton of shit that I've never seen before where it's, like, it's connecting to like a bunch of different, I don't know. Like I'm complaining for no fucking reason. Sorry about that.
Well, Steve, you will enjoy this. I will send it to you.
Please. Yeah. Email it to me. Like just email it to me directly or DM me or whatever floats your boat.
It's Steve. Coming. It's coming right now.
Thank you.
I promise.
This is the longest episode I've ever done of the show. Steve, you're fucking great.
And it could have gone all night, man, because, like, you know.
I appreciate you so much. Thank you for doing this. What do you want to leave everybody with tonight?
Oh, good karma. No. Well, look, I mean, like we started talking about comics, so we should probably bring it around. Like clearly, if you like my bullshit opinions about wrestling and or metal, even if you don't, if you hate them as well, buy Scarlet Witch. And if you like them, also buy Scarlet Witch. But listen, you might think that I'm a beclowned fool running his mouth. But as Rich said earlier in the interview, listen, we got Sarah Bakelli on art. We got Russell Dunderman on covers. It's the best looking book that Marvel publishes and also one of the most critically acclaimed of the year. So love me or steamroll me, but this is a book you should be reading. And it's the best, it's by a wide margin the best thing I've done, at least since leaving DC, where I will say I did Martian Manhunter, also one of my favorite things I've ever done. So if you don't know about Wanda Maximoff or you've just seen the TV show, this is something you can welcome anybody in. Each issue is brand new. Like there's new threats. We're trying to pack as much into every issue as we possibly can. So if you were looking for the most bang for your buck, some of the best art of the industry, Scarlet Witch, Marvel Comics, me, that's the thing you should be buying.
Fucking A, man. Listen, buy those books. Do exactly.
Ask my dream creative team. What's my dream subscription? 3 Scarlet Witches, bitch.
3 Scarlet Witches. Keep buying all the Scarlet Witches.
3 Goldbergs. 3 Goldbergs. Scarlet Witch. They're all reading Scarlet Witch.
Also, side note, I did love your Martian Manhunter. It was awesome. Thanks, dude.
It was my pleasure.
What can I say? What a great guest. Steve is one of my favorite people that I've met doing this. I can't wait to catch up with him at New York Comic Con. And guys, this week, Astonishing Iceman #1 comes out from Marvel, written by Steve Orlando. So please go check it out, coming out this Wednesday. Our next episode is going to feature Sunfire TV. If you don't know who she is, please go look her up. You will not be disappointed. I will see you soon, my baby.